Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, talknation.org for transcripts and discussion. I'm Dori Smith. Today we'll take a look back at media in 2005 with Diane Farsetta. She's a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy. Diane Farsetta received her PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Cellular and Molecular Biology program in 2000. She has a background in journalism and activism and has been a volunteer reporter with Madison Community Radio Station WORT since 2000. Her freelance features have appeared nationally on Free Speech Radio News. You can find articles by Diane Farsetta in Z Magazine and Common Dreams. She's also a founding member of Madison Women for Peace, a Code Pink affiliate. Diane Farsetta, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for having me on.
Tell me what the Falsies Awards are, who the top winners are.
Sure. Well, they're, as you could imagine, very prestigious. Basically, this is the second time that towards the end of the calendar year, we've looked back over the past 12 months. And, you know, in our work, we track deceptive public relations campaigns, media spin, different sorts of deceptive public relations techniques, and to see what happened over the last year, you know, what has been really egregious, what has been the worst of the worst in terms of really subverting what we would say the free flow of information that's important to the democratic process. So for the last 2 years, what we've done is we've put this together in, you know, a humorous way, and we've awarded the Falsies Awards. What we did differently this year is actually asked our readers for help with this. So we had an online survey that people could take, and you know they could rate the different nominees that we came up with, and also suggest their own nominees for the worst, you know, spinners of the year. And we had almost 850 people take that survey. And next week on our website, which is prwatch.org, we'll have the full results from that.
Now, let's start right in with the top winner. Tell us who the winner is and what the story was.
Right. Well, the what we're calling the Gold Falsies Award winner of 2005 goes to not a person so much as sort of a media trend in a time of war, and that is not counting the dead. This comes from a few different stories over the last year. In March, there was a survey done by the American University School of Communications. And what they did is they surveyed 200 different media personnel, people working in newsrooms all across the country. And they asked, you know, what are the different factors that go into your reporting on Iraq? And they found a pretty remarkable level of self-censorship on that. And they found that a lot of newsrooms, out of fear of offending their audience, you know, wouldn't put in information about specifically about civilians and either civilian deaths or the hardships that civilians in Iraq just, you know, day-to-day basis are dealing with because of the U.S. invasion and occupation. One respondent in particular that we highlight in the Falsies Awards had written that the real damage of war on the civilian population was uniformly omitted from the coverage coming out of his newsroom. So we see this over and over again. More recently, back in November, the Pentagon started releasing, or at least periodically releasing, what it calls enemy body counts. And there's a whole bunch of questions around that. I mean, that's something that hasn't been done since the Vietnam War. And specifically, they were doing that, again, in a very selective manner, and there's no way to really confirm what they're saying. You know, are these really enemy people? You know, how did they die? How are we sure these aren't civilians? But they were doing it in a way to say, no, really, you know, we're not losing the war in Iraq. There's really progress being made. So, you know, it was selective information that was not verifiable, that was being used in a very propagandistic manner. And, of course, earlier this month, there was big news when President Bush, when he was giving a speech, an audience member asked him, well, how many Iraqi civilians have been killed? And he said, oh, you know, 30,000 more or less, in a sort of very strangely, I would say, distracted tone. And that, there was a lot of dialogue around that. Is that a good thing for him to say? Definitely it was a break from the stance that he's taken before. But it also, I would say it's interesting to point out that him saying that came at a point when his approval ratings were actually at the lowest that you know, during the 5 years that he's been president. And it came right before the parliamentary elections in Iraq. So, you know, he was able to present himself, especially to international audiences, as, okay, well, finally, you know, he's being more realistic. He's recognizing, you know, the impact of his foreign policies, and at the same time to have that very quickly overshadowed by this very, you know, positive story of the elections being held.
I happened to see the press conference with George Bush. He took questions from an audience after making a speech. Now, I noted that a woman who had asked him about civilian deaths in Iraq framed her question in a very interesting way. Her actual question was, how many Iraqis had died as a result of the insurgent attacks? At this point, the president answered that he thought it was around 30,000. That statement was translated by the American press to mean that he had said there were 30,000 civilian Iraqi deaths overall. That was the story I saw.
Right. That is very interesting. And you know, it's could be, you know, seen as a way of deflecting. You know, there is this real issue out there. There's this real concern that, you know, Americans are, you know, whether you were for the war, against the war, what else is going on in your mind about Iraq, you know, it's a very legitimate, very important question to ask is, you know, what is the impact of this on the people of the country? So it seems like that's a very effective way to sort of deflect that concern and to say, you know, we're not the bad guys. It's not our fault. Look at these insurgents. And, you know, again, there's the whole politics and there's the spin around insurgents, you know, that they've been called so many different things by the administration, you know, that originally they were Saddam loyalists and then they became, you know, infiltrators from other countries and, you know, and now they're more insurgents.
I thought about that statement by the president when I watched a BBC Two special. They had a war crimes tribunal on the BBC. And someone that I've interviewed a few times, Dar Jamail, participated in this tribunal, and he presented information about having been in Fallujah during the time that it was under U.S. siege. Mm. And the attorney that was defending the U.S. position, defending against claims of war crimes, argued with Dar Jamail that if he didn't see the people getting killed firsthand, perhaps they were killed by insurgents in Fallujah.
Right. And again, you know, obviously in a war zone, it's very difficult to get any information. But, you know, that reluctance, that really seemingly lack of any sort of assuming responsibility for measuring the impact of, you know, that sort of large-scale operation, especially in a relatively small area and, you know, high and densely populated area as well as Fallujah, that there wouldn't be that information being collected about what is the impact of civilians there, or even denying, you know, without any information, you know, that these casualties were caused by U.S. military operations. You know, Robert Frisk, for example, I know has done really great reporting just going into some of the hospitals in Iraq. And there's a lot of information out there that for political reasons is being marginalized by the Bush administration and also, you know, by the media, that there aren't these questions being asked more often, that there aren't more people like Robert Fisk that are, you know, trying to go there, trying to get out this information, although, of course, there's safety concerns, very legitimate safety concerns there. It's a huge issue. And another aspect of this not counting the dead is, what about Afghanistan? And, you know, there was a similar debate back and forth about civilian deaths in Afghanistan, and there was a U.S. academic named Mark Harold who was tracking reports of Afghan deaths after the 2001 invasion there. And he came up with the number of almost 3,500 civilians killed by July of 2004, and that's just relying on media reports, and it's also, you know, relying on media reports where an attack or where certain deaths are well reported enough that there's two independent sources confirming that death. So he's always said, look, you know, this is definitely a lower end. This is a very conservative estimate. But there are still U.S. military operations going on in Afghanistan, And more recently, Human Rights Watch has pointed to the U.S. arrest and detention practices in Afghanistan as specifically endangering the lives of Afghan civilians and also undermining efforts to restore the rule of law in Afghanistan. So that's something, you know, at least there's some debate, there's some pressure on the administration with Iraq to look at this to somehow, even if, you know, with spin, with deception, to somehow address, you know, what has the cost of the Iraq war been in terms of civilian death. But in Afghanistan, that really, that pressure, which was there earlier, has really, for the most part, I would say, evaporated.
Diane, I want to say, too, we're going to be talking about Fallujah and the War Crimes Tribunal on the BBC with Dar Jamail. And I just want to say that the BBC audience found the United States and the UK government guilty of war crimes in Iraq. And the audience that participated on the internet joined them in that verdict. Let's get to the next winner of the Falsi Award that you have claimed.
Right. And this is the Silver Falsies Award, and it goes to what we would say is a highly deceptive public relations technique, and that is video news releases. And what video news releases are video segments that are produced either by public relations firms or by public relations departments within companies or within government agencies. They're produced to look exactly like television news reports, and the worst part is that they are very often aired by TV newsrooms without any sourcing, without any disclosure to the audience that this report, you know, whether it's about the Department of Agriculture or about Monsanto, that this information is coming from, you know, the entity that's being reported on. So this, we would say, it's a huge undermining. It's basically commercials, in a way, that are being presented as news reports. And not only do they slant how things are reported on, they're so pervasive, they really have an effect on even what is reported on the TV news because of the dramatic understaffing of TV newsrooms. So, you know, for example, you have perhaps a public interest story that there's not some sort of actor involved with large amounts of money who's putting out video news releases. That lessens the chances that you know, possibly very important public interest story will be reported on, at least by the TV newsrooms.
I want to ask you about a specific story that I saw on CNN having to do with, quote, the other Iraq. This was a segment of a broadcast that was a commercial for investing in Iraq. I presume it was made by a PR firm working on behalf of the leaders in the Kurdish region of Iraq who were already anticipating that they were going to be partitioned into a new country, the other Iraq. Now, I saw the commercial as part of both a news broadcast about the commercial and then later as a standalone commercial.
Right. And I know that there was the Kurdistan Regional Government has retained a public relations firm in the United States. They're actually based in Sacramento, California. Their name is Russo, Marsh, and Rogers. And they were in the news earlier, actually over the past year plus, with being very involved in setting up the group Move America Forward. And this is a group that really hit the news first in 2004 around the election. They were urging people to boycott the Michael Moore movie Fahrenheit 9/11. They had a campaign to get the United Nations out of the U.S. They had a campaign in support of John Bolton and his nomination to become the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Their latest ad campaign by Move America Forward is to basically say, to make the point that, oh, there were weapons of mass deception in Iraq. So this is the firm Russo, Marsh, and Rogers. They're obviously very affiliated with the Republican Party, and they have been retained by, as I said, the Kurdistan Regional Government. An interesting thing, just about the same time that at least we got word through the public relations trade industry press that the Kurdistan Regional Government had retained the PR firm Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, the group Move America Forward was arranging for U.S. talk show hosts, again, conservative talk show hosts, to go to Iraq, to report from Iraq on the good news that they felt that the mainstream media was ignoring, and they called that their Iraq Truth Tour. Again, as reported in the PR Trade Industry Press, one aspect of this contract that the Kurdistan Regional Government signed with Russo, Marsh, and Rogers was to get free media to promote the interests of the Kurds. One of the things that at least many Kurdish leaders are interested in specifically is independence. So that's an issue where, again, it gets complicated very quickly. You know, their access to oil fields is another very big issue that that the Kurds would like to have control specifically around an oil-rich northern Iraqi city called Kirkuk. There's a lot of very important issues going on there, and really, you know, questions about whether the involvement in the promotion of the aims of the Kurdish regional government, if that might be at odds with the broader interests of the U.S. in Iraq.
We're talking with Diane Farsetta. She's a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy. Diane, tell us how people can log on to learn more about the work of the Center for Media and Democracy and this new award-winning program you have going on there.
That's right. Well, the website address for us is www.prwatch, and that's .org. And people can see starting next week, probably on Tuesday, we'll put up the whole Falsies Awards. We've talked about a few of the top winners. We're going to have five top winners. We're also going to have a Reader's Choice Falsies, which is our readers who had written in to suggest their own nominees, and also to suggest to write in their own comments about, you know, the past year of spin and public relations and how they felt about it all. And then lastly, because we want to say that public relations, it's a very pervasive and it's a very powerful industry, but organized people are also very powerful. So we're also going to have a few win over spin awards for community groups and people that really challenge some deceptive media spin and were able to get out the real story.
Moving down the list now of Falsies Awards, talk about the military's psychological operations.
Right, and this is something that's been in the media, obviously, a lot recently with revelations that the Lincoln Group, which is a very well-connected Washington, D.C.-based public relations firm, that it was working for the Pentagon to pay to get stories that were authored by the Pentagon into Iraqi newspapers. This was important. It was important to get that out. The Lincoln Group is actually a PR firm that the center had been tracking for some time because they had been getting, you know, seemingly out of the blue, they had been getting these large-ticket government contracts to work on psychological operations. They were doing a lot of work in Iraq, and they were involved with doing media outreach, trying to build support, basically, for the U.S. occupation of Iraq in various ways through the Iraqi media. They had been involved with that for some time before this story broke recently. And they were also only one of several groups that have been involved in these kind of psychological operations efforts. And I would say one of the really interesting and concerning things that are going on right now is the increasing reliance of the U.S. military on these privately held public relations firms to engage in psychological operations. What you have there is you have a setup where it allows plausible deniability. You know, for instance, when the story broke about the Lincoln Group paying to have these stories placed in Iraqi newspapers, instantly you had high-ranking military officials saying, "Oh, we didn't know about that. You know, oh, what's going on? We're not sure. You know, we don't have the facts. We'll have to get back to you with the facts." That was, you know, the refrain over and over again. That ability of the government to distance itself, you know, when it's found out, is definitely a huge issue with the increasing outsourcing of something as, you know, questionable and as sensitive as psychological operations.
Now, I want to talk about the dishonorable mention tie that you have arrived at between Tom DeLay And the president, in using soldiers as a political backdrop for speeches and so on, I want to talk about that in the context, too, of just the kind of lack of concern for the rules, the laws, the normal standards of ethical operation for government staff.
You know, the tongue-in-cheek tagline that we're using for falsies, dishonorable mentions, awards, is support our props. And this is the idea that the Bush administration, especially the president, is just increasingly using as a backdrop U.S. military people. And there was a quite interesting and now infamous incident in October where there was supposedly this teleconference that was billed as a conversation between the president and these troops stationed in Iraq. It wound up being outed, interestingly, as something that was rehearsed beforehand, that there was a public relations person, Allison Barber, who went on and rehearsed with the soldiers beforehand what they were going to say. This was caught in one of the video feeds and was actually aired by U.S. Networks, so that's how we found out about this whole thing being rehearsed. But in addition to her in Washington, D.C., rehearsing the answers before this, you know, supposedly spontaneous conversation was going to take place, one of the soldiers that was before, you know, the president that was taking part in this conversation was also a military public relations person. So you had, you know, this very orchestrated, again, at a time of increasing questions, increasing uncertainty about the war in Iraq. Well, you know, not only if you dare to question the president, you know, how about questioning these people on the ground in Iraq? Who knows better than them what's going on? And they're talking about how, you know, things are improving and how the military operation is going and how, you know, how we're really making important strides and bringing democracy to this area. So it's again, it's very manipulative.
And the Tom DeLay dishonorable mention that you found.
Right. And this was specifically on Tom DeLay's mugshot. And this was something when he was indicted for conspiracy and for money laundering with regard to raising funds for his Texans for a Republican majority group, that he was ordered in late October to show up at the sheriff's office in Harris County and to be fingerprinted and to take his mugshot. But he had this, you know, really great, you know, very happy, big smile on his face. He was all dressed up in a suit. You know, he had his House of Representatives pin on. The mugshot was also atypical because it didn't have that, you know, the information on the bottom that usually goes along with people being processed into the justice system. So it looked very much like, you know, an ordinary picture, you know, even a campaign picture, rather than a mugshot. And in fact, afterwards, you know, information came out that he specifically didn't want to have any picture that could be used against him in the upcoming campaigns to try and unseat him. His advisors urged him to grin so that, you know, the picture couldn't be used against him. There was so much spin, obviously, that was going on around this specific event. And when the indictment first came out, you know, he and his supporters were trying to smear the district attorney, Ronnie Earl, as someone who is incredibly partisan. He called him a rogue prosecutor. They were actually using the prosecution as a fundraising tactic. You know, all these things going on that can be shown to be, you know, demonstrably false. But again, you know, just trying to limit the impact on someone who is, you know, obviously very powerful within the Republican Party. And another thing, you know, looking towards 2006, that Tom DeLay has also been implicated in one of the ongoing investigations into the lobbyist Jack Abramoff and some of the money for legislative favors that was going on there. So as more people, Michael Scanlon, who is an Abramoff associate and a public relations person, to come back to the wonderful world of PR, you know, he has a plea deal. He'll be talking more in 2006 about various events, various, you know, arrangements that were made with Tom DeLay's office and others, and also former DeLay aides that have gone into lobbying and have really brokered this close relationship between his office, and of course, his office isn't unique in this. You know, unfortunately, this tends to be the case on Capitol Hill. But still, I think the degree is pretty remarkable to which Tom DeLay's office really became a nexus or a revolving door for lobbying shops. And again, for the highest bidders, really could buy influence into very high-ranking officials.
Let me ask you to comment on a recent report in the mainstream media that the president got something of a bump, a raise in his approval ratings after making speeches and after reaching out to the public and after a fairly large and supportive media effort, too. Just want to ask you, does this make sense to you in light of the fact that a Zogby poll recently found that close to 60% of respondents thought the president should be impeached?
Right. Yeah, you know, I would say that almost more media attention was given to the fact that the president was reaching out and trying to build support for the Iraq War than what he was saying. It was almost that was the lead story rather than, well, what's the reality and what's going on? You know, I would say that the biggest PR boost has not been different speeches that Bush has made recently, but the fact that there were parliamentary elections in Iraq, and actually if you look at the history of the president's poll numbers going down and down, they do tend to have little boosts when things like elections can be held. And, you know, other commentators have pointed out, well, you know, there is such a thing as a showcase election, and even something as integral to democracy as an election can be held for the benefit of, you know, an interested party such as, you know, the president, in this case, President Bush. So I think that there's a lot of different things going on, and polls being used to drive news coverage of something are really, I think, one of the large negative trends right now in media coverage. If you look at foreign media or even at Canadian elections, you see a huge difference in how elections are covered there relative to the United States. They're a lot less poll-driven. It's a lot less like a horse race than it is covered in the United States. But, you know, they're in the U.S., you know, among mainstream media, this sort of the poll, the horse race, the polling, the emphasis on that as being a major hook for news stories has even gone beyond the election season to cover everything from, you know, what's going on in Iraq, how long should we stay in Iraq, you know, what should we do about immigration reform, and it's really the erosion of what the democratic role of the media should be, I would say. It should really be to be a watchdog for the government and other powerful institutions and to parse what's being said and evaluate whether claims are true or not, and to even, you know, especially on the editorial page, opine about, well, what, given that this is the reality, you know, what is the way forward? What should it be? You mentioned the indication of growing support and certainly growing conversations about impeachment. You know, people have increasing concerns, and rightly so, you know, with the current leadership of the country. You look at the economy, of course, you look at the war, you look at education issues, any number of things. You know, how, of course, you know, Katrina and other major disasters of the past year were treated by the federal government. We need to really have more and more community conversations about what the future should be, and whether that should, you know, include drawing up impeachment charges. I would say that there seems to be a lot more grounds for impeachment for this president than there was for the last one.
Diane Forsetta, thanks so much for joining us on Talk Nation Radio.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Diane Forsetta is a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy. You can learn more about them at prwatch.org and find the Falsies Awards on their website soon. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Stores, listener-supported radio for the people at UConn. Thanks to Richard Sherman for letting me use this time. And log on to talknation.org for transcripts and further discussion.